It's a lot more quiet.
Yeah.
You get a lot more space. The bathrooms aren't quite as pressured. Yeah.
We found a place here that has three bathrooms because, again, with six people in the house, we needed it. Yeah. And I will sometimes just seek shelter in there, just hide for days at a time.
Well, I mean, with your kids being younger, they actually, you know, they come looking for you. My kids make a concerted effort to not see me. It's generally best for them when they don't see me. So if they're here, they tend to be hiding in their room. So, but yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny though. We haven't really trained the kids to respect privacy in that sense. And so it still gets me when like my daughter or my 11-year-old son will just knock on the door of the bathroom and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What? I'm hiding in here.
Yeah, I had a few of those way back when, but not so much anymore, thank goodness.
A 17-year-old knocking on the bathroom door, that would provoke
me. But the 17-year-old is knocking on the bathroom door, that means get out now. I need in now. So, oh well.
Yeah, but then I miss them.
I'm told that'll happen at some point for me, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know what kills me is just as the older boys were getting physically capable of some really hard labor, they went up to Seattle.
Oh, wow.
And then I lost them.
Yeah, it doesn't matter for me at all. I can't remember the last time either one of the boys did anything beyond the most basic of chores. You know, the idea of yard work, no.
Oh, well, yeah, I remember, right? I used to despise yard work, absolutely despise it. Now I kind of miss it. I'm like, wow, I would love to mow the lawn once.
No, I don't miss it at all. I wish I could miss it more than I do.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and then we're supposed to get, I think the forecast was 6 inches of snow for tonight. So, I'm missing yard work is not something I'm concerned with at all.
Yeah, your yard work is imminent.
Yeah, it's pending.
Wow. Mm. I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
I'm not Sean Watson.
And Sean won't be able to join us, but we have a not Sean with us, and we are Commanderin. And so we have music, music, music.
Commanderin.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We focus on the topics the community wants to hear about and talk to interesting people along the way. Little spoiler. But never, ever talk about three banned topics, do we, Nate? Religion, politics, and Hearthstone.
Nope.
You can find us on all the social medias. Oh, I must not name Facebook, Twitter, YouTube,
don't
Reddit.
Don't do it.
By searching for Commanderin MTG Podcast. This week, Nate, we have a wonderful show lined up for our listeners, don't we? We have a special guest.
Mm-hmm.
He's the Threat Assessor, the Master of the Citadel of Pain. He's the Sultan of Serious Fun. Wait, what? Bruce Richard!
Hey!
Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you.
Thanks for making the time to come on the show. You survived taking younger children to work, traffic, imminent snow.
I've got it all covered. I got the child slave labor, and we'll see if I can see out the window in a few hours.
Oh, goodness gracious! Now you live in Boston, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Nate and I, as you know, live in California, but Nate has spent considerable time in Boston recently.
Mm-hmm. In Fallout 4.
Ah! I think the weather's probably better in Fallout 4 than it is here.
Well, it's more radioactive. There isn't as much snow. Most of the people I've interacted with, I've basically shot to death because that's how it works.
Well, most of the people I've interacted with in Boston, that's probably is your best bet. So,
yeah.
I thought Boston was the city of love. No, no, that's Philadelphia, isn't it?
That's Philly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the people in Boston are not very friendly, Bruce. I'm sorry to say.
I'm not actually from Boston. I just spend a lot of time here. I'm another cursed Canadian. So.
Are you?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great.
All right.
Nate, do we have any cards to pronounce? No, I'm teasing. Yeah, so hopefully that is a reference to our episode with the Commander's Brew guys. They were fantastic. They are so much fun.
They're a good bunch of guys, and you actually just recently put me onto their cast. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, so it's been been enjoying a few extra hours of podcasting every week.
It's one of the downsides of having a very short commute. I don't get to listen to as many podcasts as I used to.
My current job allows me to do a lot of podcasting or a lot of podcast listening at work. So that's it's always nice.
You're on the Jason Alt sort of work plan, right? Where you roll out of bed, your commute is into the next room.
No, actually, my commute is I commute right into Boston, so I commute for about 30 or 40 minutes each morning, and then again in the evening. But between that and another 8 hours sitting in an office, basically reading emails, I got a lot of time. So
yeah. We will get into the life of a writer shortly, I believe. We're going to talk about a writer you happen to know a little bit about.
Who?
We're going to talk to the world's foremost expert, or perhaps second most expert, on Bruce Richard.
I've heard of him. He seems like a nice guy.
That guy.
Yeah. But first, a little news and self-promotion, shameless self-promotion. So first, we're in the middle of preview season it's spoiler season is what they call it, for Shadows over Innistrad. Or is it Innistrad? I usually pronounce Innistrad, but I got self-conscious then. Are we loving this or what?
I am loving this. I like I like what they've got going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you probably know a little bit more than we do because you have to write in advance. So we'll try to dance around that. But goodness, this there are some fancy cards in there. What is your favorite spoiled so far?
Probably Addison. I mean, I'm all about the big shiny, so.
And she is big and shiny.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And she blows things up.
That's I think that's all part and parcel why I like her.
Yeah. Nate, I did take a second look at Diagraph Colossus, and I thought it was like 5 or 6 mana.
Mm-mm.
No way. 3 mana. That's going to be a fun card.
Yeah, I thought Relentless Dead was going to be the highlight of the zombie tribal cards, but then they put out the Diagraph Colossus. And everybody with zombie decks is going to be making room for those two characters.
Absolutely. Blue Zombies also got a decent... Got a few decent cards, too. All right, not going to look through. I'm scrolling through the spoiler list. I won't do that right now. So, yeah, awesome. But we cover most of these previews in our special preview episodes. I'm going to have to actually record one today, Nate, by the way. So, recently, we gave away a bunch of prizes. We actually had a mailbag/contest episode, and... everybody who's a pack winner should really get in touch with us. We've gotten two folks who wrote into us so far and gave us their addresses, and so those packs are on the way. But if you won the packs, then be sure to let us know. And again, the Logan and Jessica contest, I don't know, Nate, I saw you submitted an entry.
Mm-hmm.
That Logan contest was difficult.
Yeah. At the end there, it kind of gets... hard to pull apart.
Yeah. A little peek behind the scenes. My 11-year-old son was standing in my studio here, which now Bruce has seen, and seemed to sort of just fall apart at the end. And so I gave up. It didn't make it onto the final, but every time he would pull a card, I would say, mana cost. Until finally at the end, I just went, oh, God, just get it over with. But yes, so that made the contest extra difficult, but everybody should get your answers in by noon Pacific time on the 25th of March. It's very important, that deadline. So get it in. And more shameless self-promotion. Special thanks to all the folks at Patreon. No, we agreed to call it Patreon. So especially the $10 patrons. I don't know, Bruce, I don't know if you were aware of this. We are actually hosting chats with the folks who donate at a $10 level.
I was not aware of this.
Yeah. It's exciting. It's an all new frontier for us. They even helped us a little bit with this episode, and we'll call them out when we get there. This is not really news, but what are we playing? Bruce, why don't you kick us off with that if you've played any games recently? More accurately, the last game you played.
Well, the last game I played was a 60-card casual deck, and I don't think anybody wants to hear about that.
Filthy casuals.
So the last commander deck I played was Kalidus. I have talked about him a couple of times in a couple different articles, and I keep hoping that I can make it work, that somehow I can work out the themes, whether it's vampire tribal or zombie tribal, and just try and make a go of it. Unfortunately, I haven't had much luck. I've had a couple of games end quickly, not through any fault of Kalidus, but through my opponents actually trying to do things themselves. And beyond that, I'm probably going to have to go back through and try and find ways to speed things up a little bit. I think I'm falling on my face a few too many times.
Huh.
For me to blame the opponents every time. So,
darn those opponents.
Always wrecking things, ruining our plans.
And I had such great plans.
Yeah, Kalidus is brutal. I know, Nate, you were thinking about dabbling with Kalidus, and we'll get to what you've been dabbling with, but did you have any luck with it?
Oh, did I? Yeah. I made a Kalidus zombie tribal, and it works pretty well. Mm. It works like it's supposed to.
Wow.
A lot of board wipes.
You make him indestructible first, though, right?
No, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. You just want the zombies.
Blow it all up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Kalidus is going to see Diagraph Colossus, isn't he?
Yeah, and Relentless Dead, too.
Ooh, yeah.
Get in there.
And so, Nate, what have you been playtesting?
Oh, okay, so last episode, we had a question about mono-white angel tribal.
Yeah.
And I said to forget the mono-white and to use Kalia instead. I'll take that back. This new Odric Lunark Marshal, it's a pretty angel tribal, and there's a lot of humans, too, but this guy's nuts.
Oh,
he's effective.
So you built angel tribal with Odric.
Yeah, there's about 12 angels in there, mono-white angels. Hmm.
Is that because they tend to have things like, first strike, vigilance?
Yeah, out of mono-white, you can pretty easily get, out of the four, first strike, flying, vigilance, and lifelink, there's plenty of two drops and three drops, and even conditional one drops in mono-white that'll give you two out of those abilities. Hmm. And then you can branch out a little bit for double strike, and there's even indestructible in there, too. And once all your creatures have those six things, you can just start making tokens.
Oh, God.
1/1 spirit tokens with flying, indestructible, lifelink, and double strike, and vigilance.
Sorry, so Nate, is it mostly creatures that you're using to get this, or are you using a lot of equipment as well?
I'm using a bunch of creatures just because it's easy.
Sure.
It's easy to get two out of those main four abilities just through creatures. Mm-hmm. I am using some equipment. I like Chariot of War is pretty good. Sword of Vengeance as a backup for that. Mm. Swiftfoot Boots is pretty good. And, Angelic Overseer. Take a look at him and what he does with Odric.
Oh, my. Wow, that's ugly.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you've been winning most of your playtests?
About half.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do folks panic when Odric comes out?
No, he's pretty underrated so far, I think, but that'll probably change soon.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Once the knowledge gets spread around. Also, I tried making a Easter-themed deck.
Oh, yeah.
And it's pretty terrible. don't know. It's some parts of it are funny. I went Phoenix Tribal because I wanted birds with a theme of renewal. So there's a lot of Phoenix, and that just kind of makes the deck pretty terrible. There are a few eggs I can throw in there, things with the word grass. Oh, and a snake basket, because you get a basket full of eggs.
That's awesome. But it's not working so well, huh?
It's not a very good deck, no. It doesn't play competitively.
Mm. But it's fun or frustrating?
Some people might find it fun.
Awesome.
You can giggle to yourself as you play the cards, but you're probably not going to win the game with it.
Mm.
Well, as long as you're going to go Easter-themed, go with Eben Prater. Nice big Easter bunny on the picture.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, yeah, there were some rabbits. There were I found four rabbits. And, oh, another theme for Easter, there are some cards with suspend three. So you cast them, and then they come back three turns later.
Nice.
Just like Jesus.
Yes, just like Jesus. That we don't normally observe religious holidays here. Okay, we do sometimes, if we can make a fun deck out of them. So happy Easter, everybody who cares about such things. We've done it. This is our Easter episode now. Bruce, thanks for coming on to our Easter episode. Look at that.
Well, excellent. And here I thought I'd given up, you know, being on podcasts for Lent.
Yeah, well... Oh, this is where I edit most of what I need to say before it even gets uttered and recorded by the ribbon in the microphone. Well, I have been trying to wrap my head around Muzio for kind of in preparation for our mono blue big mana series. It is so alien to my green mind. I'm just like, where? I just need to beat people with big creatures. And so I'm looking at how Muzio does that. And it comes at that from a different angle. And yeah, Nate, you pointed out it plays a lot like Mael. And it does. It's fun. You go through the top end cards. And once you do, it starts rolling really fast. Oh, but artifacts and blue and ooh, it's all icky.
Yeah, if you want to play big creatures, I would recommend you try out my Jalira deck.
Yeah.
Because that way you can go Big Timmy in mono blue.
Yeah, I might have to try that. I may have made the wrong choice when I selected Muzio to prepare for the episode. Oh, well. Hey, we have a main topic, Nate. How's that for a professional segue to a new topic?
Uh-oh.
And our main topic is none other than Bruce Richard. And so we have brought one of the world's leading experts on Bruce Richard onto the show to talk about Bruce Richard. And so let's introduce Bruce Richard. Bruce.
Hello.
Oh, we are nothing if not goofy. Certainly not good. So tell us a little more about who you are, what you write, how you got into writing.
Well, most of the people who know me from my writing at Daily MTG when I was doing Serious Fun for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So my focus has been pretty much multiplayer and just the whole concept of ensuring everybody has fun. That's sort of the underlying theme in just about everything I write. I'm a big fan of the idea that if your deck isn't making everybody else at the table have a good time, then, you know, you need to take a look at the deck, decide how you can, you know, how you can change it, or if there's something that can be done to make mm-hmm. it so that everybody else is having a good time as well.
And yet, you have, again, sort of in the self-promotion, you have published multiple decks from Sean Watson. Now, Sean's whole shtick is making sure no one else at the table is having fun.
Well, I'm consistently inconsistent. I am, unfortunately, for the most part, an Orzhov player. Originally, if you'd asked me a year ago, I would have said that, no, I play all the colors. I like everything. I like doing all of these different things. And now I find that more and more I'm simply picking black and white over and over again. I find that the combination does most of the things I want to do. So there it is.
Yeah, it doesn't help that Wizards has been publishing some ridiculously good black and white cards recently.
It really doesn't. I was lucky slash unlucky enough to be the one who got to do the preview for Ailey. So I got to see the card a handful of days ahead of everybody else, and you know, trying to decide whether or not you were going to write about it as a commander, or and how to do that mm-hmm. focus. You know, do you focus it on the fact that it's the first legendary cleric, or do you focus on the fact that the card is just ridiculous? I mean, you don't have to do a cleric theme. You can do anything, and the card is just amazing.
Oh, it is.
So, yeah, it was just bizarre. But, of course, the card also got spoiled early, so I had to rehash the article a little bit. But, oh, well.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't considered that. How did you change? Can you talk about how you changed the article to account for that early leak?
I opted to... was it? There were a number of people who wrote fairly soon after it was leaked, and I felt like other people really covered it quite well as far as building it as a commander, or you know, how to tie in the theme, whether you mm-hmm. want to do a cleric theme or all this sort of thing. So I shifted way over into Vorthos. I looked at how Ailey interacted with the Vorthos world. Blake Rasmussen put me on to the fact that Ailey is quoted in a lot of the early Zendikar cards.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking at the quotes and trying to tie the current Ailey into that previous iteration and go from there. So I got some reasonably good feedback. So I guess it went all right.
Yeah, I loved it when I read your article, and you just went through every reference to Alien in the flavor text. I was like, wow, yeah, she was all over that first set, and I didn't even realize when she was leaked, right?
Right.
Unofficially, I didn't even realize that she was beholden effectively to had given herself over to the Eldrazi, and so you pointed that out, and it was you still managed to build it into an excellent reveal.
Well, and it was interesting because most of what was said in the previous cards, you can take that in either direction. You can either assume that, you know, she is completely with the Eldrazi, or you can say that, you know, that she was definitely setting up in that direction as more of a warning sign. They're coming, but we don't know how long it'll be. So it made for an interesting article. It was definitely something different for me as far as one of the preview articles. So.
Yeah, it was very cool. Yeah, you turned that rather well. So I appreciated reading that. It was nice to have the background of this card spoiled. I don't think I've read as much of the character background. Like Kalidas, for example. It would have been wonderful to have that same treatment for Kalidas, but we just sort of had the card plopped out. Not that that's bad. It's kind of fun to see Kalidas and then imagine what's going on, but to see... You know, to give it the treatment you gave Alien, to see how the character turned or how the character developed through the cards. That was really neat.
Well, and it's interesting because a lot of these cards that have this great background tend to be cards that Wizards has made a real effort to push. So when you get a card like Alien or a Kalidas and your job is to write about the card, well, I'm far less inclined to write a Vorthos-related background when I've got a card that, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, if I just manage to gain this much life, now I've got a card that I can simply just, you know, randomly eliminate permanence. I mean, why would I be talking about the Vorthos aspect of this card? It's spectacular. So, but either way, I'm glad to see that we've had far fewer leaked cards this time around. So,
yeah. Yeah, this time around, it felt like there were only a couple of commons that were spoiled, or sorry, I keep saying that, but there were only a couple of commons that were leaked ahead of time.
Right, and Wizards has sort of shifted a little. I mean, Gathering Magic got one of the Planeswalkers, and Star City got a Planeswalker, and generally speaking, those sorts of high-level mythics have always been kind of kept in-house for fear that they do get leaked. So... I'm thrilled that it didn't happen this time. I think I love seeing what the community does with these cards.
Yeah. So your article on Ailey was wonderful, Bruce, and I hope that that sets a precedent both for your own articles when you have awesome legendaries like that and for other writers. We can really use that kind of Vorthos explanation.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Now, Nate, you had a question, speaking of Vorthos explanations, didn't you?
Yeah, on your Twitter feed, I'm seeing a bunch of newspapers from the Pagliano Post. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, you did.
All right. And it seems this is all geared around the Conspiracy 2 that's coming up.
It is. I got very excited when they first made the announcement.
Oh, yeah.
And when Wizards was doing the slow release, when they were changing the name every couple of days and altering who was in charge and setting everything up. At the time, I wasn't sure how long they were going to try and keep that going. So I thought it would be fun to do from the reporter's side of things. And so my thought was, if I can keep this going through then, you know, they'll be feeding me with all sorts of information all the way through. So I'll be able to come up with these silly little article posts, you know,
right,
and go from there. And then they stopped.
Oh, no.
And then I looked at it and said, well, all right, I'm just not going to stop. So I've started making stuff up, coming up with little ridiculous little, you know, if I come up with a one-line joke and then use a small little article space to set up the joke. I've been talking with, James Arnold is the one who's doing all of the heavy lifting as far as setting it up and making it look good. He does all the layout. I just write in a few words and I email it to him and he comes back with this great looking setup. So,
and how do you know James Arnold?
James Arnold, writes at Gathering Magic and he is very interested in, he was doing a lot. He did a number of articles about, the set logos and, a number of other sort of graphics related things. And he does a lot of their graphic stuff. James is also the one who drew my avatar and on Twitter. So I talked to James knowing that he could probably put this together. And I said, look, if you can put this together in, you know, 4 minutes or less, then let's do this. But if it's going to take any real work, I don't want this to turn into a job.
Should be pretty straightforward.
Right. So we have set out, we're going to keep doing the Pagliano Post Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Yep.
We're going to keep it going until Conspiracy gets released. it works out. So we're going to have to come up with 80 of these things. We're still plugging along. I haven't even mentioned Grenzo yet. I barely touched on Selvala. There are plenty of other characters that I've hardly even talked about. And, I talked to MJ Scott, who does the cosplay for Marchesa.
Oh yeah, she does.
And I asked if I could use one of she is spectacular. And I asked if I could use one of her shots in one of the post articles. Cool. So when it came out, I made sure that she knew it was there. She saw it. She loved it.
Right.
She looked back through the previous posts and decided, yes, I want to do this. So she's now posting them on her Tumblr page as well. So
That's excellent.
Yes. So the Pagliano Post has now expanded its distribution. we're very excited. We're looking forward to bigger things down the road.
So many questions. Okay. So it's perfect that you're doing this with a set like Conspiracy, right? Because even if people take it as semi-official, and being a writer for Magic, you have to understand that that's a possibility, right? Even if it's semi-official, or it's perceived that way, it can be misleading all at once because it's a set about conspiracies and skullduggery.
That is the plan.
Do you ever get anybody who's like, hey, you know, or has Wizards written to you and been like, hey, why don't you tone it down? Or even like, hey, drop this and see.
As far as the Pagliano Post goes, no, Wizards is just fine with this. They know exactly what it is.
Ah.
We actually had a good laugh because we were running the Pagliano Post. We ran, I think, the first three.
Yeah.
And then Wizards started doing the Hanweir Chronicle.
Yeah.
So I was playing that up for all it's worth. It's like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, a nice little ripoff that they've got there. They couldn't come up with something better than this. Had a bit of fun with it. So that's been good. And as far as ideas, I am always open to anybody who's interested in being a feature reporter. Somebody who has if you've got an idea, It comes in about 160 to 170 words. Let me know. I'm always happy to add, you know, to throw something in.
Especially
if it sounds interesting. So.
So the Pollyanna Post is actually taking submissions.
Absolutely.
All right.
Are you kidding? I got to do 80 of these things. I'll take anything. Fine.
So Marchesa. Is that the Marchesa? She's the queen now?
She is the queen now. And if you go through a previous Pollyanna Post, you'll find the correct pronunciation is listed there.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, yes.
All right.
I actually had a Twitter conversation with Kelly Diggs asking what the correct pronunciation was, and then turned that into another post article. So
Yeah. We were about to do a pronunciation episode, actually. And then somebody at Wizards apparently contacted Wedge and has been having him do the official pronunciation guide. Oh, murderous. We were so set. We were going to do it and have a wonderful bit. Maybe we'll still do it, but nah, wind, sails, taken. And yeah, I kind of came around to the whole Marchesa thing because I looked it up. And I looked up an Italian pronunciation guide. And I realized that it's not Marchesa, which is what it would be if it were German.
Well, according to the people I've spoken to on Twitter, Marchesa is an appropriate Italian pronunciation. But for whatever reason, Wizards has decided to go with Marchesa, and that's what they've got. So I'm going with that, and, you know, I had a little bit of fun with it, because, of course, you know, if you're not going to use an Italian pronunciation, then you can go with, you know, Muzio, you can go with, you can take every name and basically pronounce it however you want. And, well, at some point, I intend to. So.
Yeah, that's what I do.
That's right. Nate runs a Nath deck.
Mm-hmm. Nath of the Guilt Leaf.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because as the local expert on people with N-A-T-H on their birth certificate, I get to say that.
My personal favorite one is Gav. I don't know if it's Gav or Gave or Gave, but I did an entire article at one point, and it was just a lot of give jokes. I'm going to go with Gave and, run that
that's,
way.
I'm on the Gave bandwagon.
I mean, what? I don't pronounce it Dave when I talk to my friend Dave, so.
Hey, Dave, how you doing? but does he spell it D-H-A-V-E?
Only when he wants to be pretentious.
That's awesome. Well, cool. I think at the very least, there are two people who are going to be contributing to the Pollyanna Post, one of whom actually knows Grenzo rather well.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
And I will say that April 1st falls on a Friday this year.
Ooh.
I strongly recommend everyone check out the Pollyanna Post on April 1st.
Oh, excellent.
For serious news.
Yes. There would be no other kinds.
Oh, that's excellent. All right. We'll make sure to watch on the 1st. I'm sure we'll get a bunch of retweets for you in there, too.
Oh boy, I guess I better come up with something good now.
On the topic of coming up with good things, Mr. Big Bents on Twitter wrote, essentially, whence comes your inspiration? How do you inspire yourself to write so prolifically?
A combination of desperation.
The easy questions.
when I started writing regularly, when it was, when you had an article coming out every week and you started really getting pressured for article ideas because all of the early stuff that you had is now gone. I was writing with the Muse Vessel at that time, and the three of us basically bounced ideas off of each other. So we had, before Daily MTG, before Gathering Magic, three of us were writing a blog called The Muse Vessel. And the three of us had, prior to that, had been in something called the Star City Talent Search.
Oh.
So all three of us were writing on the Star City Talent Search. And eventually I got... Oh, yeah. it was a great idea. It was a lot of work for Star City. That's probably the reason they don't want to try it again. But they got a lot of free content out of a lot of writers.
Nice. Good for them, at least.
It worked out for them. So once I was dropped, the next person in my group that got dropped was Brandon Isley.
Yeah.
And the two of us started talking about that we weren't really ready, weren't finished. We wanted to talk about, we weren't finished writing. We had more to say.
Right.
And then one of the next ones to get dropped was Daryl Bockett. And so the three of us basically got together and agreed that we wanted to write more. We particularly liked the idea of writing about multiplayer Magic.
Oh, yeah.
We wanted that to be our focus.
Right.
We knew that the audience for that is a little smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, at this point, we really didn't care.
Yeah.
We wanted to write something that we wanted to write. And if other people happened to come along and want to read it, that was great. And if they didn't, that was fine, too. We just wanted to write. So we started something called the Muse Vessel. And we started writing every week. So each of us would do one article on either Monday, Wednesday, or Friday. And we did this for a full year. We kept it going.
A full year.
Yeah. A full year. We wrote articles somewhere between 1,800 and 2,000 words. We did it every week.
Those are full-on short stories.
These are full-on articles. We gradually found our own. Each of us found our own niche. Daryl became much more about the strategy and politics aspect, and he developed. He worked on a theory throughout, and his writing style is built for this. He is a college professor. He does. His stuff is really good. Brandon has he thinks about things in a rather unique way, and some of his deck builds are just bizarre. So he started looking at a lot of interesting ideas for deck building, interesting combos, way to fit things together that we haven't seen before. And I sort of became the other guy. Originally, when I started, I thought I was going to write strategy, but Daryl was doing such a good job of it.
Yeah.
And it just seemed ridiculous to try and, to post an article 2 days after he's written this amazing article about the same thing. So I started writing about everything else. I started writing about forming, helping your group build.
You're kind of looking more at the fabric that binds a group together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I stepped away from the idea of talking about an article, of talking about a deck, or talking about how the strategy goes, and focused a lot more in on the community. So I mentioned, I did a podcast. I did an article about podcasts at the time. I did an article about just making sure that everybody in your group was having fun. I did an article about, how to deal with that annoying guy in your group who just, who won't stop playing that one deck that everyone hates. Or just all of this sort of thing. And
these are all great topics.
We kept going, and it was a great run. After a year, we were all kind of worn out. And so we gave ourselves a 3-week hiatus. And at the time, Adam Staborski was the content editor at Gathering Magic.
Yeah.
So I contacted him and said, look, I've got these two guys that I write with that are just spectacular writers, and they should be writing with Gathering Magic. It's a shame that they're writing right now for free. They should be getting something for this. This is unbelievable. And unbeknownst to me, I believe Daryl and Brandon both did the same thing.
Oh, are you kidding?
No. So all three of us had sort of realized we were kind of at the end of our rope as far as, being able to do this for another year.
Yeah.
Daryl had just moved from Japan to South Korea.
Oh, my.
So he was without a play group. So it was very hard for him to keep writing when he just didn't have any games to be talking about. So it just sort of worked out that way. Adam took us all on for a year, and then after a year, I was picked up over at Daily MTG. So, but as far as coming up with ideas, that's every day. Whether it's I have a deck list idea, so I'm going to run with that, or I read about somebody else's or hear about somebody else's deck and think that just sounds amazing, and I'll write about that. Or I'll write about a group dynamic. Or I've done a few times where I just simply wrote about one of the games that our group played. There is an audience out there for practically everything that you want to write.
We are grateful there's an audience out there for practically anything a person wants to speak about, too. When you write about what your playgroup does, do you write it as a story of what happened, or do you kind of break it down and say, oh, and this is when Phil started whining, and this is when Nate began chuckling out loud? And
I'd done a little bit of everything. I had one where it was clear that the group dynamic was, it was, there were two guys that were really, that bumped heads all the time. And I ended up sort of replaying what happened during the course of the game and the rest of the next game, and sort of then tying that in.
Do you mean they bumped heads mechanically, or was there a personality conflict?
Personality. One of the guys was, his game style was, I won't attack anyone until they attack me. And the other guy's game style was, I try and attack everyone evenly. So not surprisingly, at some point, the guy who wants to attack everyone evenly attacks the guy who will attack no one unless he's attacked.
Sure.
So this guy was attacking him over and over again all night long because he was the only one who was willing to do it. And it just, it blew up in our faces a little bit. So, you know, I wrote an article about it and kind of talked about how to work through these things. At another time, I had somebody in the group had a great deck list.
Yeah.
And so I talked about the game and how the deck list played in that game. There's just all sorts of ways to make it work.
Yeah. Does your group also share these deck lists electronically with each other, or if asked, or like how do they share these?
If I ask them, yeah, they'll give me the deck list.
Sure.
That's never a problem. We all play, a number of the guys will build a new deck almost every week. And a lot of them won't. They just stay with the same deck list forever.
Right.
If you ask somebody for their deck list because you think that the deck list is cool and you want to share it with everybody else, most people are pretty excited about the opportunity to, it's like, wow, you think my deck is good enough to be featured in the article? Sounds great.
Yeah.
So, I've never had anyone turn me down.
Oh, that's great. The situation you described, though, with the guy who attacks everyone evenly and then the one person who basically waits for someone to attack him. Now, he latches on, right? Like a bulldog?
Oh, yeah.
That's a wonderful misunderstanding.
But that's just it, though. It's not a misunderstanding. They both know exactly what's happening. They both know what is going to happen, but they insist on doing it anyway. The one guy says, look, I'm not going to not attack you just because you're going to attack me back. It's not fair to everybody else. It encourages that kind of play, and I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah.
So he would just thud right into him, and, here we go. And, it was a weird situation, but...
So they're both trying to train the other to change their behavior.
Pretty much.
It's a contest of philosophies.
Right. The difficult part is that, when you're in a five-player game and you know that these two players are going to do this.
you just sit back and wait.
Well, you just start attacking each other. So now suddenly your game has turned, it's not a five-player game anymore. Now it's a three-player game and a two-player game.
Yeah.
Because the one guy who wants to attack everybody now has to attack just that one guy. Because that one guy just keeps attacking him. He's never going to stop until he's dead. So so now he has to kill him.
Oh, my God.
And it was, it took a little while, actually, for the rest of the group to train ourselves. it's like, we can't just let this happen over and over. We just can't. Because it's you lose the whole effect of the game plan. Besides, we're all here supposed to be having fun. And these two are screaming at each other. It's like, cut it out! So,
oh my God. Now living vicariously, it's pretty funny, but oh, that's great. My God. How did you resolve that? This is fascinating.
Well, in the article, I resolved it by essentially at the end of the game, trying to, the best resolution of just about any problem your group has is to actually talk about it. You know, too many times people think that the best resolution is training. It's okay, I'm going to show you, I'm going to pull out this deck, and this deck will show you that you can't do that. But all it does is it just, you know, it just makes the guy angry. I mean, he's just going to get mad, and, you know, and then you're not going to talk. So you need to both sit down. So you need to stop. You need to actually discuss how this was going to work, how this is, you know, not beneficial to either one of us.
No.
Because in the end, neither one of us is ever going to win a game.
Right.
They're just not. But that's sort of how I tried to resolve it in the article. Unfortunately, in real life, the guy who would not attack anyone unless he was attacked, just stopped coming.
Oh.
Yeah, he just stopped coming entirely. Just as, you know, as far as he was concerned, if the other guy kept coming, he just wasn't going to come anymore.
Oh.
So, you know,
no, that's not.
Wait, which one stopped coming?
The one who would only attack if
the
attacked.
Bulldog.
Yeah. So
I'm sure he's not a listener, but if you know that person, whoever that is, tell him to come back to the group. Not just you, Bruce, but all of the other people who know that person. So if you're playing with a bulldog, no, but tell him there are better ways to deal with this than to stop coming. And did you advocate that he change his play style a little bit, or not take it personally, or?
I did try and encourage him to change his play style. Just personally, for me, I am much more along the other side as well, where, you know, I spread the damage.
Yeah.
You know, I'm all for sharing the wealth. I don't tend to target one guy over and over again until he's out. I know that that's the best strategy, but I just don't do it. So I tried to encourage him to come back. To no avail. I think he had sort of had enough. I think he's kind of faded out of Magic a little bit now. So
was he like, no, this is how we play in the Asylum. This is how we play in the Asylum.
Well, the difficulty is that his style of play is effective with the right group. You know, if you know that attacking him is going to mean that, well, okay, so I don't get to win this game. Because he's just going to come after me until I'm dead.
Was he running generals like, or commanders like Narset, Zergo, Ural?
Well, this was 4 years ago. So Ural would have been something similar. He would have played. He tended to focus a lot on a lot of burn.
Oh yeah, so a lot of burn. Got
so, it. Yeah, so he was playing red in combination with anything else.
And really.
Well, if you're only ever worried about having to hit one player, then you're sitting there with a handful of seven burn spells at some point, waiting for the first person to to do something, and it was that gets a little rough. So I mean, there are occasionally times when I would fall on my sword and be the first one to poke at him, just because someone had to.
Yes, just to prevent the same old from happening.
Right, and you know, I want to encourage him to not play this way. You know, try and build a deck that can beat everyone as opposed to just one person. But
that's kind of special, right? Like if you basically always bring burn decks to a commander game, and every one of your decks is in some way or another a burn deck, I would suggest that your strategy is kind of flawed, especially if you care about winning.
What's wrong with burn decks?
Well, Nate, I was going to get to you. I was going to say, like, okay, so this guy targets one person, kills them, and then probably moves on to the next, whereas Nate simply waits and then kills everybody all at the same time.
Well, that's a completely different thing.
Yeah. Nate is a very patient player, and he sets up these long, long game traps and then burns everyone out all at the same time.
Well, and you know, and I'm all in favor of that. Our last game, we had who was it? There's a creature that doubles the damage. I can't remember what I can't remember how it worked out, but
all,
there was
all
a creature
permanents.
That doubled the damage from all instants and sorceries.
Ooh.
And then there was an enchantment that I can't remember if the enchantment forked it or doubled it as well.
Oh my.
So, Yeah, so, you know, I swung.
Uh-huh.
Knowing that it was likely something was going to happen, I just didn't expect to get lightning bolted for 12.
Ooh.
And then he followed that up with an earthquake where X was 4. So earthquake for 16. It's like, you got to be kidding me. You know, it was a short game.
But, yeah. Was that a one-on-one or was that a multiplayer?
That was a multiplayer game.
Wow.
Actually, it worked out that two different players had those two permanents in play. So It wasn't even as though one guy had sort of set this whole thing up. He was just sort of, you know, a happy benefactor.
Like two dictates of the twin gods or something like that.
Yeah, there you go. Oh. Yeah, it was dictate of the twin gods was one of them. And then there was a creature that, I can't remember if the creature doubled the damage.
Yeah.
I can't remember how it worked, but it was, the damage was doubled. And it was just, you've got to be kidding me. But,
nasty.
Oh, well.
That's very nasty. What would you say, out of all of these fun stories and all the topics that you cover, what would you say is your favorite piece? Like the one you've written, I mean.
I have two favorites. I got to write what was it? I think it was 700. It was the 700th Serious Fun article.
Whoa.
Serious Fun is a series that's been going on since Daily MTG started.
Yeah.
And I knew that this moment was coming.
Yeah.
And I emailed all of the previous guys from who wrote Serious Fun,
mm-hmm.
and asked them for, you know, their favorite card, their favorite article, their favorite whatever, and had them each do a little bit. So in the end, the article itself, I wrote about 300 words and said very little in the article.
Yeah.
But it was the opportunity to get to talk to these people who I had been reading.
Yeah.
For the last 10 years, who had been writing spectacular stuff that, you know, that has, you know, these are guys who had inspired me to write in the past.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting a chance to, you know, to email with them and talk. And it was a wonderful thing. I really enjoyed that.
Do you guys have your own subreddit?
No.
Former Serious Fun authors and former and current Serious Fun writers.
So there was that one. And the other one that I really enjoyed, I did something called the Multiplayer Hall of Fame. The first guy who wrote Serious Fun, Anthony Alonghi,
mm-hmm.
he created this Multiplayer Hall of Fame. He went through each of the cards, looked at their characteristics, and rated every card.
What? That's crazy.
No, it's beyond crazy, because he gave them animal ratings. So he talks about, like, a rattlesnake. The rattlesnake is the card where you put a permanent on the table and everybody looks at it and says, ooh, I'm not attacking him because of what that is. Or it represents that you've got a threat. So, you know, all creatures have some rattlesnake.
And does he still do this with cards?
He doesn't play a whole lot now, but it's still out there. So, now he had 5 different animals.
Wow.
And he had written this Hall of Fame series, and he would update it every year with the new cards.
Hall of Fame. Okay.
The Multiplayer Hall of Fame. And about a year and a half ago, I decided I wanted to do this again.
Yeah.
But I knew that it hadn't been updated since, let's say, Modern.
Oh.
The Modern format. So I was not going to go through 8 or 9 years of Magic cards and rate each one of them. So I rounded up 4 other guys. Is it 4 others?
Yeah.
Everybody review cards, give their ratings. Then we did an average of the ratings, put all that together, and each of the guys wrote on one color.
Did you divide it up by year? Did you say, like, okay, you get 2 years, you get 2 years?
Well, what we ended up doing was everybody got 2 colors.
Oh, I see.
So in this case, I would get black and red, and somebody else would get red and white.
Sure, yeah.
And then we would compare, you know, what each author did for that color, and then generally average out the numbers to come out with something that I thought was fair.
Huh.
Then we put it all together. We had a multiplayer week on Daily MTG.
Yeah.
And each of the guys wrote an article about one of the colors.
Oh, excellent.
And the whole put together, it was a real opportunity, because I got a chance to talk to, or to to get Brandon and Daryl from the News Vessel.
Sure.
So they each got to write an article on Daily MTG. And then I talked to Benny Smith, who writes at Star City, and he wrote the Green article. And then I talked to Abe Sargent, who was writing at Star City and in Gathering Magic, and he wrote White. And then I talked to Adam Staborski, and he wrote Red. And I just sort of filled in the gap. So I picked a color, and I also wrote about artifacts, gold cards, and land.
Oh, neat.
And it was such a treat. Because, again, it was a chance, Abe Sargent and Benny Smith are two guys that I really enjoy reading. And I really want, these guys are long-term.
Yeah.
They've been writing for a very long time. And to see them, see their names up on Daily MTG, to get a chance to work with them on a project like this.
Yeah, that's a great collaboration.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. I don't know that we'll do it again anytime soon. it was a lot of work, a lot of work. And there are some real flaws, I think, in the system. Planeswalkers have come out since then, and they really don't fit in the current model.
Right.
So there are some things that I really need to ration out in my head and work out before I try it again. But
oh, sure.
But that was the other one. Those are the two that really stick out to me. And to me, my favorite ones are the ones where I get a chance to collaborate with someone.
Yeah.
When you can, when you tweet out your article that just came out that day,
yeah,
and you can include other people on it. When I can include Sean and say, hey, Sean, your deck list is in my article this week.
Yeah.
Or talk to the guys over at, to whoever I collaborated with that week.
Right.
About whether it's a deck list or we worked out an idea for an article and shared it. Those are always the best.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always more fun to work with someone else.
Yeah, and obviously people listening to this will be hearing it after it drops, but of course we'll at you on Twitter and we'll reference you on Facebook. It is always so much fun when you can have this conversation. Like, you collaborate with someone on a work and then you share the release with those people. It's wonderful.
I don't know if it's the most popular articles that I've had as far as clicks, because Wizards doesn't tend to share that information, but the latest article that I wrote about the podcasts,
yeah,
the podcasts that I listen to and which ones I prefer.
Right.
The feedback that I get from Twitter, through email, through media, through social media, it's off the charts.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how, as soon as people find out that, you're talking about them, they're, people get excited about it. And, it's always a nice thing to get that kind of feedback.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to see the side discussions, because when we loop somebody in as well, a lot of their followers aren't on Twitter, I'm talking about in particular, aren't necessarily right. Listeners of ours. And so we get an all new perspective on it. Plus, of course, it's just fun to watch people joke and talk about this thing that you've put out together.
Yeah, exactly. And when I do an article that talks about, the latest deck that I did, and sort of, how I can improve it or changes. Or I talk about a bunch of older cards. People like the articles, but you don't get that feedback that you get when you reference other people in the community and some of the stuff that they're doing. It's just, it goes crazy.
Now, how did you get started writing for Serious Fun? Like, do they reach out to you? Did you reach out to them?
Well, we were just talking about Twitter, and it was interesting. Daily MTG knew that they wanted to start the Command Tower article series.
Yeah.
With Adam Staborski, and they knew that they wanted Adam to do it. They had clearly seen that, Commander as part of the casual Magic sphere was basically taking over. If you talk casual Magic now, it's assumed you're talking about Commander. And they wanted to capitalize that. They really wanted to capitalize on that.
Yeah.
So they wanted to create the Command Tower. And they had an idea as to what they wanted, and Adam was going to write it. But they wanted to keep Serious Fun going.
Oh, I see.
As much as Commander dominates, social media, almost all of the articles written about casual writing are about Commander in some way. They know that a big part of their audience that was coming to their site are people who aren't necessarily on social media, who play Magic once a month.
Right.
Once every 2 months. These are people who don't necessarily even buy an entire buy a pack of the new set when it comes out.
Oh, wait, these people exist?
Yes, they exist, and apparently they read Serious Fun.
That's awesome.
So, but they wanted something there for them, so they wanted to keep Serious Fun going. Trick Jarrett, who was the editor at the time for Daily MTG, he was looking out over the internet trying to find other writers who were just sort of writing about it generally.
Yeah.
And at some point he tweeted out, it seems like there's a big opening in casual Magic writing for anything other than Commander.
Huh.
Or for casual Magic. I can't remember how exactly he phrased it.
Right.
I happened to be at work at the time, and I saw it and didn't really respond. And then a couple other people responded to him on Twitter.
Yeah.
Basically saying, you know, Bruce over at Gathering Magic is writing.
Yeah.
Is doing this.
It's a natural connection.
My writing at Gathering Magic was, I wrote some Commander, but yeah, it wasn't specific to Commander.
Ultimately, I'm willing to bet a lot of casual Magic is played in a multiplayer format, just even with 60 card decks. And a lot of the articles you write are applicable in all multiplayer scenarios.
A lot of the strategy really does overlap significantly. I mean, there's a handful of cards, obviously, that don't work in Commander because you need multiple copies, but that's a very, very niche area. So that night I sent an email off to Trick rather than just send him a tweet and said, you know, I'm writing this stuff over at Gathering Magic. If this isn't what you're talking about,
right,
let me know, because, you know, I'm always interested to hear more ideas for articles.
Yeah.
So he emailed me back and said, no. He said, you are actually one of the guys who actually does what I'm talking about.
Nice.
I just don't feel like that there's very many others out there.
Right.
And then he asked me, you know, so are you running out of article ideas? So, you know, I get the email back from Trick, and I'm looking at the email and thinking to myself, why, yes, I am running out of article ideas. I am struggling like crazy to try and come up with new stuff.
That's great.
However, you know, when the editor from Daily MTG says, are you running out of article ideas? Your answer is no, I have many, many article ideas. I can write forever. So I wrote him back and told him, you know, no, I, everything's going well. I'm having a good, you know, having a good time.
Yeah.
And just sort of went from there. And then 2 days later, he sent me an email and said, you know, would you be interested, you know, would that be something you're interested in? So it went, that's sort of how it got started.
What an amazing legacy too. Right.
It's, I feel like I'm walking in some seriously large footsteps. So,
Well, you're filling them very well. Your articles are always fun to read.
Well, thank you.
And so obviously your path to MTG writing fame, as it were, is clear. What advice would you give to new writers or people who want to become, you know, also become an MTG writer? There were a whole bunch of people introduced this year when they restarted Daily MTG. You know, Maria and Megan from Magic the Amateuring and several other folks. What would you say to people who want to break into that? Write to Trick?
If you're you'd write to Blake. Blake's the editor now.
Oh yeah, Blake, right.
Ideally produce some content.
Would you maybe sing a song to Blake Rasmussen?
Well, it can't hurt.
Yeah.
I wouldn't sing a song. That would surely guarantee that I'm not doing anything anything through Daily MTG. But I would try and produce some kind of content.
Yeah.
I know that the key for the major websites,
mm-hmm,
all of the major websites, whether it's Daily MTG, Gathering Magic, Star City, Channel Fireball, any of them.
Yeah.
You have to be able to write consistently. When I was writing at Star City for a little while, I was writing there when the Ferret was the editor. So we're talking a long, long time ago.
That is
wild. His comment, it was, I don't know, almost 10 years ago now, I think.
Whoa.
His comment to me in an email was, you know, everybody has one good article in them. Everybody can write that one article that everybody's going to talk about and be like, this is the most amazing article I've read this year.
Yeah.
And then a week later, everybody forgets about it.
Yep.
But everybody's got that one article. Hmm. It's what you're doing for the other 51 weeks of the year.
Yeah.
You know, can you, you know, can you consistently come up with a good idea? Can you consistently write?
Right.
You know, Daily MTG, at least when I got hired on, was not interested in someone who was only going to be able to write once every handful of weeks. They want content. Content is king. If you can't produce your content every week, then it's not looking good.
Right.
I mean, I'm convinced that that's a big reason why I did get picked with Daily MTG. When you could do a year at Sirius, when you do a year through the news vessel and not get paid and never miss the deadline, never, and do a year at Gathering Magic and just don't miss deadlines, it says something.
It tells them what
they're getting.
Yeah.
I don't pretend to be the most exciting or interesting writer out there. I think there are a lot of people that I love to read that are just a blast to read.
Right.
But when it comes to, you know, weekly consistency,
it's hard.
It is really hard.
Yeah. Even what we do, and we just have conversations and record them. Basically, what you guys do, you have to turn out, even if it's quote unquote only 200 words, and it's not. It's much more than that. You have to turn that out every week in 2,000 words. It's almost inconceivable.
When I look back at Serious Fun, and you realize that a guy like Anthony Alonghi did this every week, and he did it for, I believe it was 5 or 6 years. And I know that that was just at Daily MTG.
Right.
He was doing it before at Star City for years. So he did a weekly writing for like 8 years. I can't imagine. A guy like Abe Sargent, he writes weekly for 2 different sites.
Yeah.
I don't know how. I mean, you come up with something. You make it work. But it is a big part of being a content producer for Magic.
Yeah.
It is the ability, you know, the ability to do it week in and week out. And
Yeah, reliably and consistently and at high quality. It's very difficult. I kind of look at what Mark Rosewater does, and I have noticed, because I follow him on Tumblr, that we have similar sleeping schedules. But the guy, I think as soon as he wakes up, he's answering Tumblr, and that's not a lot of writing in that most of the time. But then he goes to work, and most of what he does is write, and he talks a lot, you know, to people. It's communication. But then every week, and he's got a system where he actually writes from home on Fridays, but then every week he turns out this massive article and records a podcast pretty much every day.
Well, like, yeah, I mean, he's 30 minutes every day.
Yeah.
He's like 4 days a week.
Yeah.
I don't even count Mark Rosewater, because the guy has been doing this for more than 10 years straight.
Yeah.
I don't count him. It's not realistic. He is a machine.
He's not human.
No, he is not human. That is ridiculous.
He messes up the curve for all the rest of us.
Oh, absolutely. I did 2 years for Sirius, 2 years of Sirius Fun. And, I feel like that was, you know, a solid, that was 2 solid years. That's 100+ articles. That's impressive. It's nice. It's good. And then you look at his stuff, and it's just, you know, I mean, you gotta be kidding me, man. Every single week he does this, and it's nonstop. It never breaks. Hey, Daily MTG added a handful of writers. So a number of us now write closer to once a month rather than once a week.
Right.
Not Mark Rosewater. He's still there every single week.
Every single
Monday morning, he is there. You know he's going to be there.
Yeah.
You click that button for the website, you know his article is coming up. It's just a given.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to happen to stop that.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Okay, so we all admire Mark and wish we could be as prolific as Mark. And we recognize that he's probably fueled by some other, perhaps necromantic, but definitely supernatural source. And you do not want to violate the color pie if you work for Mark. It's terrible. We have it on good authority that he has a collection of knuckle bones. We won't go there. So
I believe that was the Ethan Fleischer episode.
Yeah. When we had Ethan on, he let slip the, you know, a little bit of the back behind the scenes action there. It's just scary. You violated the color pie. Okay. Friend of the show, Nicholas Jaragoski. He wants to know, do you have a lot of freedom when you're writing? Like, can you pick the topic, or when you were doing serious fun regularly, do they feed you topics and say, we need something on this?
With serious fun, we had, or the website would have theme weeks. So during the theme week, that was your topic. So it used to be that, you know, well, if they were still doing it the same way, I would expect that a theme week coming up would be Delirium Week, where you somehow use delirium in an article. Or so, you know, all of the various, you know, there might be a cycling week or something like that. And then every second week it was open. So you could write whatever you wanted as long as it fit within your topic.
Sure.
For serious fun, the only other restrictions I had were they would ask that I only write about Commander occasionally.
Oh.
We already had Command Tower. You know, this wasn't going to be a situation where there was just going to be two Commander articles every week.
Right.
So he asked specifically, you know, be sure that when you include deck lists, include 60-card deck lists. It wasn't that I wasn't allowed to talk about Commander.
Yeah.
Just that, you know, we keep it to a dull roar. So I had plenty of Commander-related articles and deck lists, but that was something to keep in mind. Hmm. So other than that, and they prefer most of my articles to have a deck list.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Whether it's 60 card or Commander, they found that hit counts and attention to the article goes way up when you have a deck list.
Right, of course. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I guess the other one was, I'm an old school player who happens to have a full set of dual lands.
Yep.
So when I was doing deck lists, I would naturally include them in my deck list.
Yeah, of course.
And so Trick let me know. It's like, okay, so can we drop those? Because the people who are reading your articles just have no opportunity to ever buy those.
Oh, I know.
They're just not available to the public, especially not to a casual player who's only playing once every few weeks. So we don't want them looking at my deck list going, okay, that's another impossible to achieve deck list.
Right.
When in fact, you know, every article, every deck list that I was putting out, you could easily swap out, you swap out the duel for a Ravnica shock land or even an invasion tap land. It comes into play tap land. We are talking about a casual format.
Yeah.
You're not going to live and die with whether or not, you know, you happen to have a dual land that you can tap on that turn. It just, not that important.
I make a lot of fuss about guild gates, but you know, in a very casual format, and if your group isn't in the very least spiky, then guild gates have a place there, right? And those are the same invasion tap lands, the ones that come in tapped.
Right.
But don't tell anybody I ever said that. Guild gates are not acceptable.
Well, you are talking to a guy who used to run the Homelands Trilands.
Yeah, I know them.
Yeah. So I don't have to do that anymore, and I don't. At one point, I broke down and would do that. So.
Yeah. No, it's one of the things we don't talk about mana bases in great detail, in a lot of great detail, in part because, like, I'm one of those folks as well. I have a full set of dual lands, and I'm very fortunate that I have them. I know this, right? But if we were to list, you know, in every one of our decks, we run through it and say, oh, and by the way, here's my Savannah again, or one of my Savannahs, or here's a Badlands, or an Underground Seas, it gets a little bit, it just feels ostentatious. Even though, you know, right. I didn't pay any real money for these dual lands, right? Like, the most I ever paid for a dual land back in 1996, I think, was $10 maybe for one that I really needed.
Right.
Yeah, so, but But yeah. Well, how do you feel about the reserve list?
Well, I think I, as far as I could tell, I'm the only fan of the reserve list.
Oh, are you?
I am.
Why is that?
I bought my duels when they were mostly in the $40 to $60 range.
Whoa.
Except for the last four, three or four.
Yeah.
And for those, I paid over $200.
Whoa.
It was clearly a case of, you know, I desperately wanted to finish.
Yeah.
And, you know, common sense went out the window. You know, what is the casual player spending this kind of money on a single card for? But I did. However, the reason I did was because of the reserve list. I knew the only way that this card goes down in price is if, you know, is if it gets played less in Legacy. If Legacy as a format fades. Because I knew they were never going to reprint this card.
Right.
Ravnica Dual Lands? I bought singles of them.
They're pretty good.
But knowing, I mean, everybody knew they were going to get printed at some point again.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to spend an exorbitant amount of money for them. I mean, I spent less than $8 a piece.
Yeah.
For these. And I wouldn't spend more because at the point they were at $20 or $25. And I wouldn't spend the money because I just knew they were going to get reprinted and then they were going to plummet in price.
Yeah.
So the reserve list to me means that that's when I'm willing to pay that kind of money. And that was the reason I was willing to do it. Now, you know, I wish the reserve list never existed in the first place.
Oh, I know.
Because then these cards would get reprinted. Quite honestly, you probably wouldn't have a modern format at all. Why would Wizards create modern if they can reprint all of these older cards?
Right.
So they would just reprint the older cards. But it is there. And now that it's there, I've relied on it. And quite honestly, I don't feel like there's anything on that list that is absolutely essential to the average player.
Yeah, there's not much, especially in a Commander format.
Well, yeah, especially in a Commander format. I mean, don't get me wrong, I understand. When I play my Tropical Island in whatever Commander deck, that's a card that you can't... It's practically irreplaceable in a Commander deck because you're replacing it with something that's bound to be not as good.
Right.
And it just means that if we each have 10 types of dual lands in our Commander deck, your 10th one is going to be worse than my 10th one. And I get that, and I understand it, but I just don't see the... I don't want these cards reprinted.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
So
that's fair.
I completely understand why people think otherwise.
Yeah. It's perfectly understandable, frankly. I mean, I'm a proponent of the reserve list going away, and yet I know that as soon as it does, or if and hopefully it does, but in that scenario where it does, my collection easily becomes, you know, one quarter of the value it currently is. So, yeah.
Right.
But again, I've always been, you know, I like to have that, I like to have decks that work really well and are thematic and fun to play. And so if dual lands are kind of a facilitator for that, I think the more dual lands exist, the better. Right. I like Jimmy Wong's suggestion where they print legendary lands that function like dual lands, except that they're legendary, so you can only play one.
Oh, and you know, Captain Sisse would love that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, maybe we should stock up on Sisse's right now. Another friend of the show and one of our $10 patrons, actually, Robin Koss, he says, if I put on an English accent, will you feature one of my lists? And he says, I can write it in a Cockney accent if necessary.
You can let Robert Koss know that I have checked out his blog numerous times. I really like what Robin writes.
Yeah.
And I suspect it's only a matter of time till I'm, you know, knocking on his door looking to borrow a deck list. So
excellent.
So he won't be needing any Cockney accent anytime soon.
Oh, good, good. I would love to. Let's not tell him that, though. And let's see if he can write it in sort of a Swedish Cockney accent all at once.
That does sound interesting.
Yeah, doesn't it? he's a swell guy. If we can ever get you online to playtest decks with us, he's almost always there. And absolutely vicious. Sean actually sort of, Sean holds Robin in incredibly high esteem because Robin will regularly, let's just say, stymie Sean's attempts to make everybody else not have fun. Bradford Heron, another of our patrons, says, what are your thoughts on building towards fun but still competitive decks? Like, how do you go about finding that line that I was sort of alluding to just before?
I'm probably not very good at it.
What do you mean?
Part of the reason I really look out to the community when it comes to deck lists is because I don't feel like I'm a very good deck builder. Most of the deck ideas that I have tend to be something that somebody else has already thought of.
Right.
When I come up with something that I think is a reasonably original idea, invariably I can find someone somewhere else out there has done a much better job of it than I have. So,
yeah.
Especially now, I tend to try and steal ideas. Trying to come up with something that's a combination of competitive and casual, I don't know. I mean, maybe Jason Alt is a better bet. I really like Jason's 75% theory.
Yeah, it's great.
And I like the deck list that he puts out. I feel like those are at least, you know, reasonably competitive in a commander format.
Yeah.
The thing is, my group, the group that I play with, we have one player in there who builds what I would say are, you know,
super spiky
competitive. Well, he's not even super spiky, but you know, he understands the, you know, the value of recursion and, you know, reusing your cards over and over again.
Yeah.
And, he gets the tenets. He understands that, you know, if you drawing more cards is actually, you know, something that you should be doing no matter what the format. But the rest of us all tend to build these things that, you know, it's like, I had an idea, the deck's kind of janky.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give it a shot. We'll play it a few times. And then if I try and upgrade it, it's probably just going to be, you know, three cards in, three cards out.
Right.
And that's that. So as far as trying to find the balance, yeah, I would talk to Jason Alt.
Nate really stands out in terms of being able to find that fun, often janky seeming deck that is actually incredibly effective. And of course we were going a little bit too heavy on the graveyard recursion route. You know, we were on that bandwagon pretty hard. And so he built a response to that that is, it still leaves me kind of shaking just to think about
it. Well, then Nate and I need to talk because my group has definitely gone that way. And I would love something that would just sort of shut that and shift our meta a little bit.
Oh,
you want to get rid of the graveyards?
Pretty much.
Nate has the answer.
Are you talking about Merebear?
Yeah, I am. That's what I'm talking about.
I updated her up to Oath of the Gatewatch. I haven't looked at the Innistrad cards, Shadows over Innistrad cards for her yet, though.
Yeah, there aren't too many graveyard hate cards there.
So I can give you that deck list.
That sounds great.
And you can probably assemble it. The mana base uses a lot of dual lands. And if you've been playing a while, Nate has pulled some cards. Oh, God. You'll see it. but it did put a stop to my graveyard shenanigans. All right. So when you do build a deck that you're like, you know, that you really want to have fun with, what guilds or what color combinations do you go back to as your favorite?
Well, like I said, I think it's shifted a little.
Yeah.
It used to be, well, I guess to some extent it still is. I'm a big fan of tokens.
Oh.
Whether it's +1/+1 counters or token creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I've built in that direction a number of times. And now lately I seem to be shifting more. My interests seem to be a lot more Orzhov as opposed to Simic. So that's sort of where I'm sitting.
And is it because of the flavor of Orzhov and what those two colors do together? Or is it because, like, for example, I don't play a lot of the Mimeoplasm anymore, but when I think about where home is in green surrounded by its two friends, blue and black, right? And so I tend to come back to those color combinations when I want to build something that's fun and janky. And then I'll bounce into another one if I see that it does it a little bit better.
For me, home is white. White offers an answer to practically everything that's out there.
Oh, yeah.
It's maybe not the best way to answer, but it has an answer. And then you just sort of fill in the blanks from there. And whether you fill in the blanks by, you know, adding green for ramp, or you fill in the blanks by adding black because, well, you know, if you're willing to pay some life, black also enjoys handling pretty much everything that's out there.
Yeah, it does.
So I go back and forth. Although, honestly, when I'm building decks, I tend to look at the decks that I already have and try and build something into a color or colors that I don't have something in already.
Yeah.
So when I find that I've got Kron the Dawnclad sitting in front of me.
Yeah.
So I tend to, you know, between Kron and Marchesa and Ailey and Nissa and, you know, just a handful of these are commanders that are currently built. So now I'll go through, look at the colors and say, you know, I don't have a lot of red right now. So maybe I should try and build something in red. Now, maybe it can be just solely red or it can be a mix.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll try and, you know, like, no, I'm gonna go red and then look for a commander that sort of catches my eye.
Right. Got it. And even counting the last few, what is your favorite commander of all time? All time and space.
I've got a soft spot for Kron.
Yeah.
Although I got to say, every time I play Marchesa, I'm a little bit more happy that I'm playing Marchesa. I wrote like three different articles on Kron. I knew as soon as I started that Kron was going to be a difficult to impossible commander to build. That three green, three white is just, it forces you to build in a way that just is not optimal at all. But I don't care. He's a lion with wings. He's a lion with wings.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
And he's a 6'6" flyer, and he's a lion with wings. And how can you not?
He's wearing the dawn.
Yes. Well, yes, exactly. He's wearing the dawn. He is in exact opposition to Vella.
Yeah.
I really got a kick out of the card. I tried building him in a 60 card deck.
Mm-hmm.
I struggled to try and find things that would fit and to make things work. And, you know, it just every once in a while it would happen and it would be spectacular and wonderful and sparkly rainbows and Skittles flying everywhere. But for the most part, he's just, you know, a lot of times it was just, you know, a big piece of lion turd falling from the sky. So, you know, you can't, when the deck is just, it was so back and forth. The last article I did was a commander deck list. I talked to Judson Gruber.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had a Kron deck list already put together, and it was Kroned with capes and cloaks.
Oh, that's excellent.
So every card in the deck has to have an image of a cape or a cloak somewhere in the picture. And I said, okay, you know what? Send me this list. So I took his list, I ran with it, I added I changed a couple cards just because I couldn't find all of the cards that he had in it.
Yeah.
And I played it a few times and just, I had fun.
Yeah.
And it's not effective, it's easily shut down, and I just didn't care. And I will continually try and build this thing to make it work.
Yeah.
And I'm confident it never will. But I'll keep struggling, and then, you know, after getting beaten up too badly, then I'll move over to Marchesa's loving arms.
That's funny. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah, he's a Kron is a card I've always considered building around, but just it really has to be approached from, okay, how am I going to have fun with this? Are there enough cats? Like, can I do cats with him? Judson's cape deck, I had forgotten about that, but yeah, that's funny.
The problem with Kron is obviously it's his mana cost and the idea that not only that, but here, attach an aura to it,
yeah,
to get the full effect. Oh, okay, so you're setting yourself up for a two for one immediately. And, you know, and once you try and cast him that third time out of the command zone,
oh, God,
you're just like, you know, is this really worth 10 mana?
Yeah.
Is, you know, I could do so many other things for 10 mana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can exile a target permanent. Once.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for ten mana, I can, you know, you can work around the spine of Ishthaw and some kind of recursion, and you can just do that, you know, without having to deal with the idea of trying to come up with six different colors of mana.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, Flying Lion.
Yeah, but hey, yeah, Flying Lion. I mean.
I would be very disappointed if Krond is actually the person riding the lion.
I have a sneaking suspicion that Krond is, in fact, the person riding the lion.
Yeah.
But I'll never admit it.
Yeah, nope.
Nope. No, he is a flying lion.
That's like his groomer.
Yeah. someone has to hold, like, or was it? Yeah, someone must ride blindfolded on the back of the flying lion.
Yeah, they're not allowed to see where Krond is going. But they have to be there to brush his tail out.
That's right. I mean, you think the Dawn comes up that clean all the time? Somebody's got to maintain here.
Yeah. I don't suppose he can clean his own feathers either. Not with a lion's mouth.
Well, yeah. I mean, you would think they would fold in. I don't know.
Nate, can you do Archon Tribal?
I doubt it.
Angel Tribal already starts at a pretty high mana curve. I think Archon Tribal is even higher, so...
Yeah. A lot of changelings in that.
Yeah, and I think most Archons are actually blue, so...
Oh, blue? Stealing all the Archons?
I think. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Oh, they're white.
Oh, the Archons?
Yeah, they all have white in them.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I know Theros had a couple.
Well, there's hope.
Well, Bruce, it has been a real pleasure talking with you. I'm just being conscious of the time here. We are taking up so much of yours, and it's lovely. I love this. You have to come back, and we have to make sure that you and Sean have an opportunity to talk. If that's fine by you, it's fine with us.
As long as we could just hold hands quietly, that would be fine too.
Yeah. Well, he'll be in Los Angeles, hopefully. We'll have to see if he can make it out, but hopefully for GP Los Angeles in May, I think, Nate, you're planning on coming down as well, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And, of course, I will drive the 15 minutes to the Staples Center or wherever it is. Yeah. It's going to be fun. So everybody in Los Angeles or nearby, mark your calendars. Make sure to come to GP Los Angeles. And at the very least, we'll hang out. There may or may not be a bar in the future, so... Yeah, so if you can make it out from Boston, I realize that's a big trip. But it's warm.
May is the month of Yolanda. That's my wife.
Oh.
Yes, between Mother's Day, a birthday, and an anniversary, May is pretty much out for me. But we'll see about other ones. I'm eyeing up PAX Prime right now.
Oh, excellent.
There's a chance I might swing through Seattle. Gen Con is still not out of the question for me. And I am definitely on for PAX East. I already have my tickets, so...
Oh, excellent. Is that in Boston this year?
It is.
Excellent.
In Boston every year.
I admit I don't follow PAX East very much.
They tend to spend too much time on electronic games, but there's always plenty of Commander players floating around. So,
Bruce, where can people, if they want to reach out to you and ask for advice that we didn't get to, where should they go? How should they reach you?
Well, if you're looking to send me something deep and in-depth and with many, many questions... I find Twitter's great.
Mm-hmm.
I am mana burned at Twitter. That's burned, not burnt.
That's totally different.
Yeah, it is completely different. And if you want to send me an email, you can try MTG or Serious. What is it? MTG Serious Fun?
Yeah.
Or is it?
Well, we'll include all the links.
I hardly ever check the damn thing. Try me at bnrichard@hotmail.com.
Oh, okay.
That'll be the easiest way. I check that one all the time.
Great. Okay, and we'll include links to all of these in the show notes, as well as links to your Gathering Magic archive and your Daily MTG, or actually your Magic the Gathering archive on the Mothership. And thank you for coming on. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
We, like you, we love our listeners and you, the readers. We talk to them almost every day. We're constantly tweeting. So please, everybody, this is what I'm saying to you. Write to us. Tweet at us. Come join us on Skype. Playtest games. Playtest decks and cards with us. It's wonderful. Plus, if you really like us, go rate us 5 stars on iTunes. And of course, if you really, really like us, we're looking for is a buck a show. If you can throw $1 at us for each show, that'd be wonderful. That's going to let us expand and do some more wonderful things. Our theme song was created for the podcast by Nate Burgess, our logo. So, Bruce, if you ever need a theme song, talk to Nate.
All right.
Or a mean deck list that evaporates all the fun things in life, talk to Nate.
Wait. There was a card that you described before, and I had to look it up. It's Fire Servant for 3 red, creature elemental. Oh. It's a 4/3. If a red instant or sorcery spell you control would deal damage, it deals double that damage instead.
What set is that from?
Oh. Hate.
I don't know. Let's see. 2011?
Oh, yeah. It's from M11 and then the premium deck list Fire and Lightning deck series. Oh, okay.
And so if Riku, it's cumulative. So if Riku makes a copy of it, then your burn spell does quadruple damage, and then Riku copies that burn spell for 8 times damage. You're welcome.
Oh, that is terrible.
Yeah, no, that game was comical because the guy had out, what was the enchantment we were just talking about?
Dictate of the Twin Gods.
Dictate.
Yeah, he had the Dictate of the Twin Gods out. I had a card called, what is it? The Capuchin Unicorn? Yeah, the Capuchin Unicorn, it's a 1/2 unicorn, and its ability is a disenchant. You sacrifice it to disenchant. So I took the 12 from the lightning bolt because I didn't want to get rid of it yet because I wanted the ability that this double to exist for later on because I felt like I was going to get hit this time fine, but the next time somebody else was going to get hit, it was going to be far worse. So I took the 12, and the guy who had the dictate out was looking at me like, not understanding why I would agree to take an extra 6 damage.
Right.
And I'm just nothing, not saying anything, like, nope, we're just going to do this. And then he immediately followed it up with the earthquake, and I'm just like, oh, damn. So, yeah. So I also got to look like an idiot at the same time, so.
Because you were sandbagging the unicorn for.
Yeah, I'm sandbagging something that's already in play, and everybody else is looking at me like, did you just forget? He's not doing it. What? Why is he taking all of this damage?
Well, that's great. Yeah, and you're like, I have a plan. Oh, it hurts.
My plan.
Plan's gone awry quickly.
I usually do that when it's either super late at night or I'm already sort of in a funk because I'm like, why is he doing this? I want my stuff. So I lose track. Oh, I had the Silver Chase Fox out. I could have done something. Damn it. All right. Bruce, if you ever need a logo. Our logo was created by Mr. Picto and with assistance from Kelly DeLuca. Kelly's my wife. Special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and of course, Justin for his server space. And of course, very special thanks to all of our new patrons on Patreon, especially Rob and Alex, Bradford, and Jackie. Thanks, folks. You can reach us by going to our website, commanderandmtg.com. Our email is cast@commanderandmtg.com. You can find us on all the social medias that matter. How about that? Because we're not on Periscope. By searching for Commander and MTG Podcast, and individually, on Twitter, I'm at KETJAK, so follow. That's Ketjak.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And Bruce, to take Sean's place just for the end of the show, would you say, and that's our show.
And that's our show.
Oh, thank you very much.
Go Mandarin.
Something that I would like to try and something I would like to see is I would love to see somebody try and stream Commander games.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about streaming Magic Online Commander games. I want to see them stream a live game. My problem is I'm not sure how it could possibly work, because I think it would involve having to have two or three cameras. I think you'd have to have microphones. I think you'd have to have so many different things going on that I think it would take four players and five other people to make it work the way I envision it.
Have you seen the Commander Versus series on Star City Games YouTube?
I have, and they've generally done it through Magic Online, right?
No, they do it all in person.
No? I've got to take a look then.
Yeah.
Because the closest I had seen was the guys who were at Three Player Politics, and they do they basically record it, and then they edit. So then they go through and edit, and they'll do like 10 hours of editing to distill it down to a shorter game. And they only have three players at a time. But I just keep looking at it, and I'm like, I'm not sure how that makes sense. Like, can you zoom in? You know, you'd have to be able to zoom in on cards. It would be a real pain to try and figure that out. But so I'll have to take a look and see what Versus has.
Yeah, they're pretty good. I'm sure they do some editing, but it doesn't come across like they do. And they keep up a running conversation, right? And they basically play pretty rapidly, and they also are not afraid to combo out, so they're able to get games done in about an hour.
Right.
But otherwise they actually manage four player games, which is, and do it all on camera. When you count the cameras they use, it's only really possible in a studio setting.
Right.
Rocket Jump could probably do it. But again, we'd have to, like, streaming a Commander game isn't exactly the most fun way to spend an hour.
Right. And that it can be difficult. I mean, I watched you guys, I mean, just watching, you know, Jimmy and Josh do it for their 100th.
Yeah.
You know, even just jumping over to you guys was impressive stuff. I mean, you know, but these are guys who know exactly what they're doing. So,
yeah. And they were absolutely right. You know, they had a camera on us, but for the most part, really just what matters in a Commander game are those spiky, like those moments of interest spikes, right?
Right.
Those spikes of interest, I should say.
Yeah, so perhaps streaming isn't the way to go.
Yeah.
Maybe you're better off, you know, recording it and then editing out and trying to hit just the high points. But I don't know. It was something, I'd watched enough of the streams for various tournaments, whether it's modern or whatever. And I wanted there to be something like that for the Commander player. And I haven't really seen anything that perked my interest, but this Versus might.
So then Nate, we'll just have to, make sure to make the conversational ahas. And then Bruce, it will sound like we're kind of putting you on a bit, but
maybe I can do a soft hum while he talks. And then I'll edit that out.
That may be the solution. I don't know.
Oh my god.
But I think it'll crack us up a lot more than
Yeah.
All right.